This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 165. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-8816-7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
I'm talking a little bit about spinners this week. Hello, Berners. Hello, Gareth.
Hello, fellow. You all right?
Yes, very good. I'm joined, as always, by Berners and Mark Garraway. And Berners, this week you're down the cricket club.
I am. I got caught short, so to speak, and I was lacking Wi-Fi, so I've dived into Ealing Cricket Club, bathed in greyish overcast conditions, but several youngsters running around. It's the half-term holiday courses run by Mrs. Peplow here, ex-Middlesex left-arm spinner, so it's all going off, but happy to make it, guys.
Very good. Saw them on Sky Sports last night, actually, Mr. Peplow, and I assume that's one of your overseas guys that are doing such a great job with the youth development.
Yeah.
Nothing to add.
Nothing more to add on that. There you go. That's that one. That's that done for this week then.
Yeah, yes, they are. I don't play in that team. I'm not worried about them.
Fair enough, mate. Fair enough.
But I'm thinking about sunnier climes at the moment because I saw an article this week from a friend of Pitch Vision Academy, Akash Chopra, who's got a course up on Pitch Vision Academy. But he was talking about bemoaning the lack of good quality spinners in Indian first-class cricket. He was sort of blaming the IPL for having guys who bowl wicket to wicket and fire it in and just do the job of a slow medium pacer. Do you think that's accurate, Gareth?
Oh, I'm not convinced, especially when you have a look at the most valuable player in the IPL this year, which is Bean Narayan, who's now over. We're getting ready for a very wet test match, as it looks like in the West Indies. I think that the flight, the mystery is still really important with an IPL. So I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. Whether the flight and mystery comes more from the overseas spin bowlers or not, you know, that might be an argument. And if that is a case, and if that is true, then it would be interesting to see whether Mr. Chopra's article actually spurs the Indian coaches to do anything about that. But it's not something that I would say stands out for me through watching IPL, because I still think that when you take pace off a ball, when you use your flight and try and deceive the batter, that's when spinners have got their best chance of getting wickets.
Of course, everybody said when 2020 started in England, oh, this is it now. That's it for spinners. It's going to be pace all the way, you know, little dibbly dobblers or fast bowlers, and the spinner will be gone in no time. And it was the opposite, wasn't it? You know, everyone was surprised.
Yeah, it certainly was. And actually, in England, it is more noticeable that spinners played a bigger part within games. I think one of the reasons for IPL is that their boundary lengths are that much shorter than the general boundary lengths in the English 2020 game. And certainly in the Big Bash as well. I know that they brought the boundaries in a bit because the grounds are so large over there. But even so, it still gave spinners a chance. So maybe within the IPL, the reason why people have gone flatter in the eyes of Akash Chopra is the fact that the boundaries are so small, and that could be something that will be looked at to try and keep the spinners involved in the game, because it's exciting when people are taking pace off. You know, just to hit through the line of a cricket ball on a flat wicket isn't necessarily a particularly tough skill nowadays. You know, a skill is to be able to pick the line, pick the length and pick the flight of a ball, and then still be able to do it and get the ball over a boundary, which is a decent distance. And I think that's a challenge that the spectators are going to want in 2020 cricket going forward.
Here's one for you. Do you think someone like Vettori, for instance, do you think he comes into the 2020 in India and bowls a subtly different stock delivery compared to, say, an international 2020 when playing in New Zealand then? Has he restructured his game somewhat for the IPL, do you think?
difficult one to say. I mean, Dan's actually always been one that's bowled it very slow in one day cricket. So I haven't seen anything in the IPL that suggested to me that when he has bowled that he hasn't done exactly what he's done over the last 15 years or so. So I think he continues to take the pace off of a ball. That's his strength. He's not a massive spinner of the ball anymore, and it really it's experience and his flight which gets him the wickets.
Spinner's a bit of a misnomer of a word. I remember talking to another friend of Pitch Vision Academy, Menno Gazendam, who has done some spin bowling content for us, and he was telling me that spinner is not really the right word, because spin is just one aspect of a spinner's armoury.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I think he's absolutely spot on.
You know, you've got drift and dip, you've got angle, you've got the pace on the ball. There's so many dimensions to a spin bowler. Just to call him a spin bowler is the wrong term, really, because spin is just one of so many things. And just because you're not a big turner of the ball doesn't mean that you can't be an extremely effective spin bowler.
Well, we see that with Chris Gayle, don't we? You know, he doesn't spin the ball at all, really. But what he does is he bowls with his head. He thinks like a batter, and he applies the ball that the batter doesn't want any given time. And I think there's a real skill in that. And as you say, he's not putting a great deal of spin on it. Just going back a stage, Terry Jenner, who's one of the best spin coaches, obviously worked with Shane Warne, would always talk about spin being in the air and break being off the pitch. So spin in the air provides the ball the opportunity to drift. It helps the ball to dip. So the more spin you put on the ball in the air, even if you're not getting anything out of the surface, means that you are getting the ball to move in the air or to dip. And that's the thing that often gets the wicket.
Ben, as you bowled a few tweakers in your time, do you fire them in or do you throw them up?
I tend to give them a bit of air, and the further they hit me, the higher I toss them up, because eventually they miss hit one. But I think left arm spinners is a dying breed wherever you are, really, aren't you? Because you're left handed essentially, and I'm not sure what the conversion is of or the ratio of right left handed players in world cricket, but it certainly favours the right arm. I often think a left arm spinner in any cricket you play, just because of the varying angle and the fact that you don't face it very often, is very, very problematic for players.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that as well. I think right-handers and off-spinners, you know, they can still be successful, and we see some great examples of off-spinners that are successful. But in the main, if you can get the ball to spin away from the bat, whether it be as a right-armer bowling to a left-hander or the other way around, then you've got a great chance. And the statistics in the IPL, particularly from the last 3 years, are very much backed that up, which is why left-armers bowling to right-handers, particularly in the power play up front, have been very, very successful.
Is that because, is it as simple as if the ball's going away from you, it's harder to hit it to the leg side?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that is one of the things that does come into play, but also it's the angle as well, because if you think about a left-armer bowling to a right-handed batter, the angle is coming from out to in and then going back out again, particularly on wickets that are spinning away. So you get that cramping motion. So if the ball doesn't actually break off of the pitch, you still get that cramping motion, which can restrict your arms and your levers going through the ball. So that's the first part. And obviously, if it spins off a wicket, as my dog just agrees with me, then you know, all the better. But yeah, anything that goes away from the bat, as a general rule, when people are swinging, is likely to be taking the ball away from the middle of a bat.
Okay, just to finish off this little introductory section, we talked a bit about spin, and now we're going to in detail, and now we're going to go to the other end of the extreme and just give our one word answers, yes or no, to the three questions that Berners has got lined up for the yes no round. So Berners, over to you for our yes no round this week.
Okay, first question: player rotation is a good idea?
No.
Yes.
Question two, personality is more important than statistics?
Yes.
No.
Peterson didn't need to retire from T20 and ODI cricket?
No.
Cool, you put me on the spot there, lad. No.
And it's painful not to be able to say anything more on that, isn't it?
Well, particularly after a conversation I had last night.
Oh, goodness. Okay, moving on in the show, we're heading to the mailbag and we're going to answer a few cricket coaching questions as we always do this week. And the best question wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Bernice, you have the questions this week. What's in the mailbag?
I have indeed. First question's from James, and a fairly ambitious individual. He's relatively new to the game of cricket, and he's just got involved with a club. He wants to become a leg spin bowler. So he's chosen a fairly easy entry point there. He's told that he's been picked for the first team. So I question the strength of their first team, picking someone who's never played cricket before. But he's been picked based on his fielding and doesn't get a chance to bat or bowl very often. He attends nets twice a week. He's got a couple of the first team that are saying he's improving. But he just wants to know what he can do to actually get a chance and, you know, convert his skills into the actual live game. So at the moment, it seems like he's watching the grass grow Saturday afternoon, which is what I like doing, but he doesn't like doing. So what advice have you got for him, guys?
Well, it's a bit of a tricky one because, you know, if you get told that you're picked in a side for your fielding and then never given a chance, then that's a bit of a difficult situation to improve your bowling, no matter how much you practice. But I mean, although I can understand a decision like that, in that you know, if you're struggling for players, as many sides do, then you know, you pick your best fielder and you say to him, sorry, you're not going to have much of a chance this week with the bat or the ball. But it's very demotivating for a player who's just trying to get on and trying to improve himself. So it's one of those things where I would say that you really need to sit down with whoever is in charge of selection, whether it's a captain or a coach or some kind of combination, and say, you know, it's all right, you don't mind doing your bit, you're a club man, you want to make sure that you're involved as much as possible. You know, is there any way you can have a bit of a chance and maybe be on rotation in the first team with one or two other players? Because that seems to be a better solution. If you can bowl a few overs in the second or the third team, instead of every week being the man who can do the fielding and never getting a chance to improve your bowling.
No, I agree completely with that. I think we had a similar question, maybe not about leg spin so much, but a similar question from a player a number of shows back, and we talked about that rotation and having those adult-like conversations, because ultimately you want somebody to enjoy their cricket, and you know, some people, and I've played with a couple who have really enjoyed being part of the first team set up, being a successful team and fielding and being the best fielder in the side, and that's great, but they're few and far between, particularly in this day and age where people want value for money and value for their time. I think rotation up and down and it is a good thing. And as I said back when we answered the question before, we did it at Chard a few years ago where we varied the person that would come into the first team from the second team out of the youngsters to give them the experience, but obviously understanding that they're less likely to perform at that level in the top order or bowl in the place where they would do in the second team. So they got a limited opportunity, but they got some experience and then played two out of every 3 weeks. They would play two games they'd play in the first team two out of every 3 weeks and get an opportunity to be successful in the second team as well. And this is what this lad's lacking. He's obviously got some ability because the two first teamers have made comment on that. And the idea would be to get into the nets, bowl as much as you can at more of the first teamers so you can get a sway of opinion going your way to get you the opportunity, but also to get some second team cricket under your belt, get some wickets, because statistics are the best thing to get you into a team.
I always think intelligent captaincy as well. For instance, you know, game scenarios which permit people to maybe that you're unsure about or that are lacking confidence to have a go. You know, you see often that sometimes people are quite ruthless in their approach. They want to skittle people out or so, but maybe just giving that youngster three or four overs out in the middle, you know, at that level can work wonders downstream. Maybe, you know, you might lose a bonus point or whatever. You know, you're still controlling the game, but you're just allowing him to, under controlled circumstances, just to relax and have a bowl, or maybe go in and have a bat when, you know, it's a fairly easy run chase. I think there's a lot of weight in that as well.
There is, and that's something that I think it requires skill, as you say. And you know, not all captains have that inclination, let alone have that skill set. So Again, the adult conversation at the outset, I think, is really, really important. The other thing that, and I might be coming from an age a long time ago, or a place that isn't the same for everybody, but I got brought up on the lots of midweek cricket as well, but in the summer holidays, and the Isle of Wight being a great place for people to come down and tour, we were never stuck for a game of cricket. Yet our performances within that would often influence what would happen at weekends, particularly when we were young or just starting out on a new skill that we were trying to develop. And I certainly got myself up into the top of the batting order as a result of playing some decent cricket and getting some runs in midweek cricket. So if there is an opportunity to get some games for your club in midweek or on a Sunday, then I'd suggest you take those as well.
And of course, as choosing to be a leg spinner, although a very fine choice and one I support 100%, you've got to be mentally very strong to get through that hump of standing there and getting cowed around whenever you bowl a bad ball. It's or sometimes even when you don't, when someone decides he's going to go after you because you're a new leg spinner and he's had enough of this, and he puts you over deep mid wicket a couple of times, and you think, God, what's the point of this? Well, that's the time when you really need to have that mental strength to keep going and know that if you can get through that, then you're going to be one of the most valuable players in the team. It's very tough mentally on someone, especially if they're just starting out bowling leg spin, to keep going, because there's so much, especially with leg spin, you know, there's so much theory and tactics and things like that. You can get caught up in all that kind of thing and just forget that, you know, if you bowl a good leg break, you're going to have most club batsmen in trouble at some point or another.
No, definitely. And that's where the skill of a captain comes in again, that Neil was talking about a while ago. You know, to being able to manage that, being able to set the right fields, and also to know that that person can have an extra over because you're only one ball gripping a little bit more than from the previous over, and you pick up the wicket and their confidence is restored or enhanced.
Next question is from Justin. And while batting, he's saying he constantly gets tied down and goes through periods where he can't score any runs. Are there any drills or tips which could help him to A, rotate the strike, and B, accumulate more runs during these times?
Yeah, well, this is a familiar question, but one that we've sort of had in the past. And I'm a big believer that, you know, if you're getting tied down, and it's normally a combination or a result of one of two things. Either you lose your processes, so you lose your clear thinking, or somebody starts to bowl very, very well. And a way of getting out of either of those two is to actually do something about it and move your position in the crease. And I don't mean moving at the last minute and hitting on the move. Somebody like KP would be a great example, where they'll come down the wicket straight down the line of the stumps and just basically play a defensive shot or a drive either side of mid on and mid off. You've already taken 8 to 10 yards out of the pitch length, and then you can pick up the single and get to the other end. On his course, he talks about batting from the other end when you first go in, because it gives you A, some thinking time, and B, the opportunity to look at things slightly differently than when you're facing six balls on the trot and getting stuck deeper and deeper into a hole. So I think that's a really good one. And then the other one is the Mark Waugh thing, which I've talked about before, which is having different guards and positioning yourself differently around the pitch. So if and around your crease. So if you're looking to try and open up the gap or hit a gap that's at mid wicket, then you can bat on off stump. And if it's a low wicket or you're looking to play it off a front foot, then you can bat with your front foot a foot and a half down the pitch and just knock it into square leg, because the ball is a normal delivery, the one that's been getting you bogged down, but you're in a position, you positioned your head and your body over one side of a board, and you can clip it into mid wicket and get one. There's often a gap at mid wicket. It's very rare that you always have that gap blocked off. So I'd say move your position down the pitch, move your position across the crease, and open up a scoring area for yourself. Bat from the other end a bit. Notice what field changes that the captain is then forced to do, and often it opens up one of your scoring areas anyway.
There's a trend that I've noticed in the games that I play where people don't really think about strike rotation until the score's 12 off 8 overs. And then suddenly someone on the sideline goes, God, they're not really rotating the strike very well, are they? And then it's one of those things that isn't really thought about until it's a little bit late. And I think just having the mentality of as soon as you walk out thinking, how am I going to rotate the strike? Where are the gaps? What am I going to do to get up the other end? As you say, Gareth, it's a massive leap for a lot of club players who it's kind of like it's either a four or it's nothing.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it was something that we talked about a lot at Somerset in 2005, because we had a lot of players who would face 10 balls before they'd actually start working things out, as you say, just like a lot of club players do. So we actually, instead of saying, okay, have a plan for the ball that you faced, our saying was make sure you've faced 10 balls mentally in your head before you go in and face the first one actually. So you go in having, you know, almost thinking yourself that you're three not out, you've knocked it around a little bit, you know where the gaps are, and then that first ball comes along, and because you've got the field in your head and you've worked out the processes, you go bang, you're off the mark and away you go.
Yeah, and a good way to do that, which again a lot of club cricketers don't practice, is to get out of the net and practice rotating that strike. You know, set up games where you do have to play tip and run right from the off, rather than just going in the net and creaming it all around for your 10 minutes and walking out thinking, "Oh, that's good, I'm in good nick," because you've middled a few, but you haven't really thought about the areas that you're going to score if you are getting bogged down. If you've got someone who's, you know, swinging the ball away from you on a good length and you can't get him away, and you know, where are you going to put the ball to score quickly and get up the other end? It's something that isn't practiced often enough either, I don't think.
No, I agree, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a practice that that somebody sets up for you. You can actually do that yourself, can't you? And you don't necessarily have to say anything to the other people in the net. But I often find that it is better if you say, "Look, actually, what I'm going to do is I want to know your field because I want to be able to get off strike as quickly as I possibly can." And then all of a sudden, it isn't just the batter that's benefiting from that net. The field, the other guys, the guys that are bowling, the guys that are waiting to bat also then pick up on it. And all of a sudden, your practice goes from being normal practice that we do every Thursday to being a heightened one, which actually bears dividends when you come to your Saturday game.
Absolutely. And it's great to get out to the middle, isn't it? I mean, you know, I do love middle practice. It feels like proper practice, doesn't it?
Best practice. Always have something on it as well. Always have a consequence. Play it as real as you possibly can. If you get that right, then I guarantee you positive results on a game day.
Normally when I get stuck in a rut, I just kind of look to still wait for that bad ball, because I always know there's one coming.
But that's a good process in yourself, though. The danger of that, of course, is that your innings as a team starts to lose momentum because the other person isn't seeing any of the strike. And that's the benefit of being able to get off strike when you get into a rut, is the fact that the team score keeps going, the batter at the other end's momentum keeps going, and also you find that the changing room atmosphere and the people that are waiting to come back in are far more positive. So whilst that's good from an individual perspective, Neil, you know, also think about from a team point of view what influence you getting off strike and keeping the other batter in the game for a little bit longer would have.
Always a team player, Gareth.
I know, mate.
I myself tend to play quite straight, so I always like it when mid-off and mid-on are up, and I find that in the standard of cricket I play, you find that if you do kind of play that get-out-of-jail card, they're normally quite quick to kind of put those players out deep. And I remember speaking to Alvin Kadatarani, who often said that as soon as you go over the top of mid-on and mid-off, if you're a half-decent player, there's one pretty much every other ball, just because you don't even need to really play an off-drive or an on-drive. Just by playing a defensive stroke, you can get it past the bowler and there's one there every ball. Of course, they're going to maybe start to bring them in again, and then you can look to go over the top again, because the whole time you're getting your eye more and more in.
I know, he's absolutely right as well. And I don't think it's just reserved to club cricket, that. And one of the things that used to infuriate me was how many international captains it would take one shot over the top and then that would be it. And, you know, with the amount of one-day cricket we play nowadays, people have become so accustomed. I was watching Surrey play the other day in a one-day game, and they were so good at hitting the ball, beating the bowler effectively, and just picking up an easy single all the time. So good that you think, well, hang on a minute, bring the bloke up and put him under some sort of pressure. And I always ask captains to give as much time to the guys in the circle as that they possibly can before putting them back. Obviously, you don't want to lose a game as a result of it, but you know, people are so good at milking the ball down the ground now with those defensive shots and those half drives. It's a massive ploy that I think gets used too much, just sticking the blokes back as soon as one guy's gone over the top. And the other thing that infuriates me is when a new batter comes in the middle of a 50 over game and he's got two men back to start off with. I mean, what's that all about?
You're just giving them a run there, aren't you? The batsman will take it every time, won't he?
Well, unless that person has no ability to keep the ball long ground, it just seems like a really, I don't know. Here you are, mate. Yeah, get yourself in, and then and then we'll try and bowl at you when you've got 15 to your name. You know, it's just, and I even chuck that criticism at Strauss, who I think is a fantastic captain. Yet, as soon as somebody goes over the top, Swanee's always got a man back. And you just think, how good Swanee, you know, he doesn't necessarily need that guy back all the time. And, I just think it's a bit negative, to be brutally honest. Even in Test cricket, I see that.
Just going back to that point, though, do you think that certain players, you know, within teams, even in club cricket and at the professional level, that their reputation precedes them in terms of what they can expect? So that you know, Pollard got a player here at Ealing, Lee Parry, who often comes in, you know, seven or eight lates down the order, and he's known in the league. People know what he's going to do, and anything in his half, he's going to look to stick it out the ballpark. Mm. So do you think that's got a variation a little bit as well?
I think absolutely, and good on them for developing that reputation. The challenge for me is that the reputations are there to be broken, not everybody can come in and just spank first ball back over the top of the bowler's head. How many people can actually do that? I mean, I played a heck of a lot of cricket at a relatively good level, and there weren't too many that could just come in and go ping straight away. Particularly because they've got to get used to the ball, they've got to get used to the pitch, the match situation might not allow them to do. And so I congratulate them on building up a reputation. I think reputation's huge. Shane Warne probably got 200 wickets with his reputation out of all of the ones that he got. Yet, you know, they're there to be taken down as well, because ultimately they're only human.
I'm also, as a captain, chucking the ball to me best bowler when that guy walks in and says, right, if he's going to do that, he's going to do that against me best bowler.
Yeah, good shout. Absolutely. That reputation, you know, we always used to say within the England setup that the reputations that were there to be broken, as too were records. So if there was an opportunity to win a series 4-0, because England hadn't won a series 4-0 for X amount of time, then that's got to be the aim. And it's interesting to hear the England camp, even before a ball was bowled in Test matches this year, saying that they want to win every Test match this summer. They want to create that record again. And, you know, that's what they're there for. It's all the guys that are going to run, jump and do their stuff at the Olympics this year. They're going to go for records, and they're there to be shot at.
This week's soapbox is you, coach. Hammer away, 60 seconds. Let's do it.
I've just been looking at something that we at Pitch Vision have been doing in India this week, which is to do with helping the Delhi Premier League, a sort of mini IPL version of the IPL for age group cricketers. And I was amazed to find out that when they had their trials for the DPL, that they had over 25,000 cricketers apply to become part of a franchise. And so what the DPL did to help cull down that selection down to just 300 from 25,000 was to use Pitch Vision and a player assessment system that we developed to allow coaches to very quickly work their way through players. And I think that's the way that testing and analysis is going towards becoming a lot more meritocratic. So it isn't based on reputations, it isn't based on what went in the past. It's based on the performance that you can put in that can be measured, and that's got to be a good thing for cricket because it brings talent to the fore. That is the end of the show, but before we go, we are going to do a couple of little housekeeping points, the first of which is to pick a winner for the prize, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, this week we had James, who was frustrated by his lack of bowling opportunities, and Justin, who was frustrated by being stuck at one end and not being able to rotate the strike. So which question did you prefer?
I'm going to go with Justin's this week. It's something that happens in all forms of the cricket, all formats of cricket as well. So Justin's question, how to get off strike. Hopefully we answered that with a little bit of clarity, and that's a winner.
Yeah, it's not all about hitting boundaries. Sometimes it's about working the ball carefully into the leg side and getting up the other end. It's not very glamorous, but it's where games are won and lost sometimes in those little singles, isn't it?
Does the job.
So that's that question this week. But if you wanted to win a prize yourself, then you need to know how to get in touch with us. Send your question in to us. And Berners, you can tell us how to do that, can't you?
I certainly can. You can give us a call. Our number here is 020-88-167-691. Or alternatively, our email address, drop us a mail. It's coach@pitchvision.com.
International numbers are also available on the website at pitchvision.com. You can get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and you can also Facebook us, if that's even a word. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us there. No problem. We are available in iTunes if you want to subscribe to the show for free. It's Pitch Vision Academy. Do a search in iTunes. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you can head over to pitchvision.com. Click on the podcast link at the top and you've got all the details on how to subscribe any way you like to the show. It won't cost you a penny. Right, just before we finish up, we're going to have our tail ender for those of you who listen right to the end. So, Berners, you've got a new one for us this week.
Yeah, originated in Devon a few years ago. It wasn't so big back in the day, but now it's a prominent part of all forms of the game, and that is the classic GP, which is a glove puncher. Now, I've got guys back in Devon, and they tell me, never trust a GP. In any habit or form of life, you never trust a GP. They waste time, they waste resources, and generally, they're not good blokes. Me, myself, I've come to the capital of England, and I've turned into a GP. However, if I look back on my career, I wasn't a GP until I came here. I'm going to have to seriously take stock of my GPing ability moving forward.
Do you give the GP, or do you accept the GP when someone walks up?
Yeah, I'm an acceptor. Never a leader with the GP. Never a leader.
It's a bit harsh to leave someone hanging when they walk up to you in the middle of... They're standing there with their glove out, and you're just looking in the opposite direction.
I'm always a big believer that GPing is for a reason, you know, something you've done well. But quite often you see four byes go past or something, and there's often a little GP in the middle of the wicket. Why? You know, you should be GPing the wicket keeper, not the other end.
I'm a proponent of the handshake. I enjoy that.
Like a good handshake.
Right, you, Gareth, what's your thought on glove punching?
We were never a massive fan of it at Somerset, I have to say. And any player that we signed that was a GP in the way that Berners is talking about would often find that he'd be told that at the first opportunity that he tries to do a GP would get a very stern rebuke. So not a massive fan of it, I have to say. And I quite like the KP cuddle. I think is more of a is more appropriate, particularly when people have done something pretty special. It's always good to see KP out there when somebody's getting 100 or 150, because they know that they're always going to get a good squeeze.
There's nothing. The only thing I think Kevin Peterson likes more than getting 100 himself is someone at the other end getting 100, because you know when you've got a Peterson hug, don't you?
You do. It's often, there's a jump involved in it as well, because most of the people are a bit smaller than him, so they have to jump up into his arms. But, you know, he's got a wide wingspan, that man, and he wraps it around really well.
Yes. I didn't a few years ago he did one for Michael Vaughan, which he pushed his helmet to his face.
Yeah, that was right. That was, that's true. That was at Headingley, actually. Against the West Indies.
100, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And that was a goodie, that was. He did Vaughan's helmet. Vaughan couldn't do many things and look cool, I have to say. And he was doing a pretty good job, and NKP came and ruined it for him, and gave him a big hug, and the grill went up over his snout and up into his eyes. But it's a good picture. It's still doing the rounds, that one.
Well, on that note, I think that's plenty for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, lads.